so much for the music. But we'll see you next time.
Whoops, no problem. Okay, welcome to the train. I'm your host, Anita Encourt. I'm just going to put some theme music on, and then we'll be back in studio with today's guests. We're going to have a special on foster care. That's the idea for today.
Baby, I said the train is coming now. Baby, I said the train is coming now. So long I've been waiting, waiting for you. Oh yeah, now the time has come when it's between me and you.
Welcome to the train. Okay, I'm your host, Anita Encourt, and as I said just earlier, our special today, we have two guys here who were foster children, who were in group home care and so on. We have Jesse McVigor, who's been on the show before. Welcome, Jesse.
Hello.
And John Dunn, who's new to this show. John Dunn has been through 13 foster homes in 16 years and 18 years old. And you survived that.
Yes.
And you're now 36 years old. And welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
So we're going to do a bit of in-depth exploration of what it's like to survive foster care and what it's like to try and reform the foster care system because, John, you have now become somewhat of an activist using various means, legal means, direct action, trying to get through, trying to communicate your opinion and so on, to try and reform the system because there is some evidence that it needs to be reformed, right?
Oh, yeah.
Maybe we should start there. What can you tell our listeners about how the foster care system maybe needs some help, needs some change? What evidence is there to that effect? Why would you say that? How would you argue that out?
Well, I think one of the most things for anybody who wouldn't want to listen to your average person like myself is the Ombudsman, for example, of Ontario. You know, if you want to go to the officials, he recently tried to get jurisdiction over children's aid societies in the province, and the ministry fought him tooth and nail against it because they wanted to have their own control over complaints procedures. So that's one, you know, one example is, you know, there's accountability issues that really need
to... Are you saying they're not accountable? There's no oversight of any kind? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. And that's also backed up again with the Child Advocate of Ontario. They did a report on...
Well, who's the Child Advocate of Ontario? What is that? Is that an independent organization, government-funded? What is that?
Well, it's under the Ministry of Children and Youth Services, but there's been a recent move to have it as an independent... A lot of other provinces have independent advocates, but at the moment they were... in history in Ontario, they've been under the ministry. They have to report through the ministry. So this is a problem. Judy Finley is the Chief Child Advocate of the province. And she did a documentary, that CBC did, called Going to the Wall, where she almost lost her job because she was sort of arguing against the fact that she shouldn't have to report her reports through the ministry before they go public. She should be able to just pop it into the legislature and have it go public. So that was a big thing, and she called it Going to the Wall, you know, and she fought quite hard for independence, and they're finally getting there. But even still, I think there's problems with official child advocate offices in that they have their restrictions, you know.
So are you mainly criticizing Ontario, the Ontario branch of child care?
I have most knowledge with Ontario, but I know that there's a couple other provinces that also don't have independent advocates, so I would say it's probably the same issues nationwide.
And why is it so important to have independent oversight? I mean, because it seemed to me that this agency is looking after everybody's good, right? The whole idea is that they do good to
that's
these children
the idea.
who would otherwise have a very difficult time in their original families. Is that not the idea? I'm playing the devil's advocate.
Yes, yeah. It is the idea, and that's the argument you always get, is that, how could Children's Aid be doing anything bad? And, I mean, I always qualify it and say, you know, of course there is good work being done. You can't deny it, right? And there are good people in the system.
Well, there are always exceptions that prove the rule.
Right, yeah. But when it comes to policies, when it comes to policies and practices that are actually taking place in the real world, anybody who tries, mention, you know, that this is what's really going on, they're suddenly labeled as rebels or aggressive.
What's
or
really going on is based on statistics. I mean, the statistics are pretty clear. If you look at most youth on the street who have custom, they've been through the foster homes and things like that, right?
And now they won't take help from anybody.
Go ahead, speak up, Jesse.
Like what you said, they're out there, they have all these problems, and nobody will listen to them, and they didn't listen to them for so long, so now these kids are like, well, you know, they're not going to listen to me, why bother? And they're not going to ask anybody for help, and they're not going to trust anybody anymore, and then they end up turning these hardcore criminals that we see. It doesn't make sense.
So you're saying the system is not really caring for these. It's more like a holding pattern, and in fact they get abused a lot. And
they have so many kids, and they have so few beds to put them in, and it's like, because they can't.
You're talking about these group homes now.
Well, group homes, foster homes, pretty much same thing.
Yeah.
Less qualified people work in foster homes than group homes.
Okay.
So, but it's, you know, like they have... They're trying to put these kids in as many beds as they can. They're trying to get them, and like you can't blame them. They're trying to help the kids, but in their great upholstery of wisdom, they're not really looking at the consequences of trying to move everything this fast. And they're doing like there's reports that workers don't even look at half these case files. Like that report that was done by the the Auditor General. Half these workers aren't even looking at the caseloads. They don't know who these kids are, but they're just sending them to whatever family next, and next family. And
they're overworked. They're sending them off and patching up the problems as they come
up. They say they need more funding, and it's not so much they need more funding. They need more people that have an understanding of what the system is about. And when people like John try to get involved, they're right there to insult, call names, discredit. Mm-hmm. And it's like, all we want to do is help them.
Yeah.
We obviously know more stuff about this than they do, so why would
you've been
they
through
not?
It. You've been
exactly.
through it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, extensive experience with the system and having survived it. Yet you try to explain what might be a better approach, and what you get is aggressive.
Well, like one thing rebuffed, too, is right? they'll have some agencies will actually have former youth in care on their boards or mm-hmm. participating with board some at some level.
The ones that have been co-opted and are obedient and polite.
The thing,
and
you know, like
you'll find that most of them are employed in the. They're employed in group homes and stuff as night staff now. It's kind of scary.
Mm-hmm. So they're getting a job on the side from mm-hmm. the same agency that they're helping to.
And they're probably the ones who came out happy with the system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, which is great. Good for you.
You can find
great.
Them. Yeah.
But they also need to listen to the ones that are angry or upset, because that's the ones where the problems that need to be fixed. I mean, airlines, for example, airlines have the most stringent you know, accountability, and they, when there's a problem, they don't hide it. They just, whoever's going to be embarrassed is going to be embarrassed, but they take care of the problem and they fix it.
Right.
And that's
there's big liabilities legal liabilities and so on, yeah.
And
yeah.
people's lives are on the line, and mm-hmm. essentially with child welfare, it's the same thing. People's lives are on the line. I mean, you got long-term effects, and if you want to be financial about it, there's the mm-hmm. cost of prisons, the cost of social welfare, the cost of ODSP, the cost, you know.
With some of the engines not functioning and
pilot.
Untrained staff, and you wonder if the pilot's half blind, et cetera, right?
Yeah.
Pretty bad.
Yeah.
Well, I want to remind our listeners that this is the last week of funding drive, so if any of our listeners have some extra cash and want to donate, the number to call is 613-562-5968, so please consider that if you can, because it's a very good community service to have this station, which is CHUO 89.1 FM. You're listening to The Train, and we're going to put a little bit of music on, give ourselves a break here for a bit. And I just discovered this incredible singer-songwriter, philosopher, activist type. His name is Utah Phillips. He's an old fogey, U.S. American citizen, and he just writes some incredible stuff. He's an anarchist at heart, you can tell from his lyrics. And he tells stories about a resistance, the 1920s and 30s when the first unions were created in America and so on. I want to play a few pieces from his CD entitled Making Free Speech. So here we go with track 17 that is called The Charge of Mother Jones. No, we're going to start with the track just before that, The Most Dangerous, with Utah Phillips.
On our way back west, Morgan and I stopped in Mount Olive, Illinois, and I was invited to stop there and sing at a memorial. Now, who of note in American history is buried in Mount Olive Cemetery in Illinois? Union Miners Cemetery. Mother Jones, yeah, Mary Harris Jones. It was a big, big celebration of her life. She always said, I wanted to be buried with my boys. Those were the miners that were gunned down during the Verdun strike many years before. It is difficult for the mind to encompass the life that embraced the presidencies between Andrew Jackson and Herbert Hoover. You know, 100 years, she born 1830, died 1930. When she was a little girl, there were people alive to remember the Revolutionary War. She died on the eve of the New Deal. That's inconceivable, you know. And her millinery shop burned down in the Chicago fire. Their kids and her husband died on the diphtheria epidemic in Memphis. He was an iron molder. That's where she got her unionism from. Speak when she was an adult. Knew everybody, you know. Knew Powderly, her best friend, the founder of the Knights of Labor. Knew Sam Gompers, who founded the AFL, hated him because he was a craft unionist, you know, and keeping bodies of workers fighting against each other. Most of all, she was a miner's friend. She was a miner's mother, see. While the men were organizing underground, she had already organized their wives, and armed only with mops and brooms, she led them over the snow-covered game trails down into the hollers to drive the scabs out of the coal pits. See? Mother Jones was not an organizer, she was an agitator. Which meant that the organizers hated her as much as the bosses. She was a wild card in everybody's deck, and nobody knew how she was going to deal herself. Mother Jones was out in Colorado during that Ludlow strike, big coal strike. And they were nervous about having her in the union hall down there. Now, 8-hour day. The state assembly had already passed the 8-hour day law. They couldn't enforce it because Rockefeller owned the militia. Well, the governor promised not to send the militia into the coal fields, but he lied, and he did. And word got to the union hall that the militia had entered the coal fields. Mother Jones jumped up and said, "Let's go get the sons of bitches." And she stormed out. She didn't wait to see if anybody was following her. Nobody was following her. Just went up the road by Russia. And that was the year that President Theodore Roosevelt called Mother Jones the most dangerous woman in America. And she was 83 years old. That's some kind of danger.
It's a rock and roll pizza party.
Thursday, March 15th at Babylon Nightclub, 317 Bank Street, a night of garage rock, punk rock, and French swinging 60s. Featuring me, Stefan, host of CHUO's Up for a Dance Live. It's a pay-what-you-can event in support of CHUO 89.1 FM. Thursday, March 15th at Babylon Nightclub.
We're back with the train. You're listening to CHUO 89.1 FM. I'm your host, Denis Roncourt, and we were just listening to a little bit of Utah Phillips, and that was the story of Mother Jones, who was a wild card in everybody's deck. And, John, you're a bit of a wild card when it comes to government agencies and the foster home system and so on. You're a thorn in their side. You're in there pointing out the problems, trying to get them corrected. And you're persistent. You just don't give up.
Yeah.
What are some of the examples of some of the actions that you're involved with now? What are you up to these days?
Well, these days, I have most recently tried to obtain membership with the local Children's Aid Society. And upon my application, which was about almost 2 years ago, I filled out an application, submitted my $5 fee. And this was a way for me to sort of get my voice heard from the inside out instead of always, you know, like I've stood on the front lawn and I've done other actions. But this was my way of going in sort of with their rules, right? So I went in that way. And all they did was send a letter back saying you are not accepted. And that, there was no explanation.
Okay.
Right? So at that point, I wrote a letter back asking, could I please have an explanation as to why? And I got another letter back.
Rejected to be on what exactly? Again?
Oh, sorry. With the Children's Aid Society, it's a non-profit corporation.
Yes.
So people can apply for memberships.
Okay.
Right? And why would you want a membership, I guess, is a quick question, right?
Go ahead.
When you're a member of any corporation, non-profit or profit, you are either a shareholder if it's a profit and you're a member if it's a non-profit. Mm-hmm. So in this case, I would be a member. And as a member, I can hold the corporations accountable by voting for who every annual general meeting, who can be a director of the corporation. And because the directors, they make the laws and rules and bylaws and can amend it.
Is it one member, one vote, or is there a share system, or how does it
work? Is one member, one vote.
Uh-huh.
And there are different, I imagine, there are different classifications of membership, but because they're not allowing me in, I haven't been able to find out yet.
Oh, it's a secret. This is not public knowledge.
And they won't even let me look at their bylaws.
So can you find out how many members there are and what the categories of members are?
I went and found out later on when I was rejected. Uh-huh. I looked around at the Corporations Act of Ontario and found out that there is a way you can do that.
Freedom of Information Act?
No, actually. Children's Aid Societies, believe it or not, are exempt from the Freedom of Information legislation. Oh.
Ontario until very recently.
Oh, are they?
Yeah. Well, no, they were until very recently.
Oh.
Yeah.
So there is hope.
There is hope, yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
I'll be working on that.
Battle.
Because that's been an issue for a while, this whole confidence.
So it's a darn secret. So they won't let you in. They don't have public guidelines as to, you know, accepting members or refusing them. They won't let you in. You ask for explanations. Why can I not be a member? And what do they do when you ask for explanations?
The explanation was that I've acted in ways that do not support the objects of the society,
or
is all they wrote.
You've frustrated the executive members, in other words.
Yes.
But and because does the society have a public mission statement, and can they show that you've gone against that?
They've never. I've tried to ask to have meetings with them in person. I said I would love to come in and meet with you, and you know, discuss what it is I've done, and if there's a chance for me to you know, act in a way that would put me in a position to be able to become
in
a member.
In your favor, basically.
Yeah. And they have just refused me. They sent me to their lawyer, and I had a meeting with him. And he just basically, I think, was trying to find out more about, you know, where I was coming from and stuff. And then he, at the end, he just told me, no, they're not willing to proceed anywhere. Thank you. This case is closed.
So he's just getting information, finding out who his opponent was.
Yeah, that's what I figured is going on. Yeah.
Right.
Wow.
So yeah. They don't have to give you an answer. They don't have to explain what the guidelines are. You apply and you're just...
Yeah, there's nothing.
You're gone. There's nothing you can do. Yeah. So do you have a next plan of action? What are you doing?
Well, what I did then, I thought, well, maybe the ministry, because the ministry oversees them, I thought I could talk to them about it. And when I did send a letter, they said that this is a corporate matter and they can't deal with it.
Here we go.
Yeah.
It's a publicly funded corporation.
Yes. 100% publicly funded.
100% publicly funded corporation.
Mm-hmm.
And so the government has nothing to say. And it's a corporation that deals with children.
Yes.
Children of the state, in a sense. So children that are in the state, not of the state. But
They're legally our parents.
Yep.
God.
Yes.
That's so frustrating. It's the opposite of an open, free society. It's the opposite of democracy.
Completely.
Yes.
Crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So, okay, where do you go from there?
Once I got that letter, I thought, well, geez, where are we going now? I guess the ombudsman. So I actually, believe it or not, was told by the ombudsman as well that they can't get involved because it's out of his jurisdiction.
Okay.
And I guess it's because it's considered
a corporate matter. They've
established that. Yeah. So now I'm thinking, okay, I'm locked out now. But I did find the Corporations Act, and I looked up section 307, sub 1.
You brought it with you?
Corporations Act,
okay. There's a pile of paper here.
Yep.
So you found the actual act that created this corporation.
Yeah, that they're registered under.
Yeah.
And... if I could read 307.1, is that appropriate?
Yeah, please do. It doesn't look too long.
No, it's a paragraph.
Okay.
It says, any person, and this is good for anybody who might be involved with corporations. Apparently, a lot of people...
go to the act, find out what the real rules are in law.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely. And these are often on the web, too.
Oh, yeah, it's available at Canly. You can go to find any legislation at e-laws.on.ca or at Canly, which is canlii.org. So, and I have no attachment to them.
Okay.
Or affiliation.
Good. Thanks for that helpful hint. Now, what does it say?
This is any person, upon payment of a reasonable charge, therefore, and upon filing with the corporation or its agent, the affidavit referred to in subsection 2, and in subsection 2 they just lay it out, you know, how to do the affidavit.
It just says I'm not a convicted criminal, et cetera, et cetera.
No, doesn't even go into that. There's nothing really for them to defend themselves with. This is a
affidavit
strict liability. Well,
I live at this address. No, all right.
Believe it or not, just says...
So anyone, basically, let's
affidavit that you would sign just says, I promise not to use the list.
All right.
I hereby apply for a list of the shareholders or members, whatever you're dealing with, of the above-named corporation. And then point two is, I require the list of shareholders only for of members only for purposes connected with the above-named corporation.
Right.
And the third and final is... the list of members and the information contained therein will be used only for purposes connected with the...
Well, that's the affidavit, right?
So there's the affidavit you would sign
and
swear.
Now, what does the paragraph say? Did you finish reading the paragraph?
No. And then,
So
there's the affidavit that they require you. And then says, may require a corporation other than a private company or its transfer agent to furnish within 10 days from the filing of such affidavit a list setting out the names alphabetically arranged of all the persons who are shareholders of the members of the corporation, the number of shares, which in this case is irrelevant, owned by each person, and the address of each such person as shown in the books of the corporation.
So basically, this is a paragraph in the Act that says that if you ask for this information, they have to give it to you.
Yes, that's how you make the request.
It's how you make the request for the information.
Yeah.
You're no longer talking about membership now. We're talking about...
Right, because they've refused my membership.
Right.
So now I have sort of a no last option.
Right. So you're just gathering information now. And in gathering information to figure out what your next step is, you want to know how many members there are, et cetera.
Right.
And you've tracked this down, and so now you've got a legal wedge to get that information.
Yes.
So then you applied. You signed the affidavit, and what happened?
And I got the affidavit sworn officially with a city councilor. I don't know if people know this, but your city councilor is allowed to swear affidavits.
Okay.
And they don't have to charge a fee, or they can, or
right.
they don't, whatever. It's up to the counselor. So you go and get your affidavit sworn. You put in a reasonable fee.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I look at previous cases and stuff, reasonable fees
say
are
whatever.
Like 5 cents a page or something, right?
Right.
So that's the reasonable fee.
Right. Well, with the Freedom of Information Act, it's $5 filing fee.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Flat rate.
Okay. Well, then I'm even more justified in this case because I put in a $20 check.
Well, there you go.
In my request.
Well, that's more than reasonable
yes.
because there's precedent there with the
Freedom
of Information
Act. I thought I would
even
cover the person's hourly fee, you know, or something, you know, half an hour of research.
No need.
Yeah. So I went above and beyond.
Okay.
And I did my $20 check.
All right.
I did the affidavit, and I filed with the corporation this request for a list of the membership. Now, they have, at that point, on February 5th, they have 10 days, and I'm assuming that's business days, to respond with the list. There is no out. The like.
Well, if the act says 10 days, you don't need to assume that it's
days.
Business days.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, 10 straight days.
Okay. Well, I've been generous then.
Yeah.
I gave them 10 days.
All right.
So, subsection 5 clarifies that it's an offense for them not to provide the list. Now, I don't probably have to read that word for word if you'd
nope.
like, I can't,
nope.
but it does
so
say it's an offense.
So, they've broken the law.
They've broken the law, and the individual directors, most of them are held not liable in a lot of situations because they've got indemnity and they can, you know, and that was done to promote people joining boards because they were
right.
all scared to join
okay.
the lawsuits. But what this does, it says the legislature made this provision because they say, it is so important that people have input into a publicly funded organization that we need to have. It's an offense for them not
sure.
to allow someone to have a list of the members so they
sure.
can communicate with them.
Sure. So now you've established that they're, and you've tried to warn them. You've said, look, you're breaking the law. You've
yeah.
tried, you spelled it out for them. You said, look,
yeah, I never threatened them or anything, but I said,
no, but you,
it is
information.
Against the law for me to
yeah.
do this. It's an offense which a person could convict you or take you to. To
sure,
court and charge
sure,
you,
sure,
and you could be convicted.
Okay, well, we're gonna get the but I want to take another music break. I want to remind our listeners that if they're enthralled with this story and if they're enjoying Utah Phillips, to think about donating to the station. The number to call right now, if you feel so inclined, is 613-562-5968. That's 613-562-5968, 5968. And we're going to continue with Utah Phillips. Now, I think our listeners were really into that story about Mother Jones. So this next track is called The Charge of Mother Jones. And it's a continuation of the story. Mother Jones is involved in the next track we'll play as well. It's called A Strike is a Massive Act of Free Speech. So here we go, The Charge of Mother Jones.
Now, if I remember the song written by a union organizer in West Virginia many years ago. Where is it? Workers come a-marching down the pike, prepared to shoot the miners in the Colorado strike. With whiskey in their bellies and vengeance in their souls, they came prepared to shoot the miners full of holes. In front of those brave troopers loomed, she was less than 5 feet tall, weighed less than 100 pounds. You're going to look like that loom, you probably ought to beat somebody. In front of those brave troopers loomed a sight you seldom see, a white-haired rebel woman whose age was 83. Charge, cried the valiant captain in awful thunderous tones, and the patriotic troopers charged and captured Mother Jones. Oh, it's great to be a trooper with a musket in your hand, prepared to do the dirty work the lords of wealth command. It's great to shoot a miner and hear his dying groans as they charge on Mother Jones.
Here's the song. Hey,
look. Habesha Restaurant, located at 1087 Wellington Street, brings a taste of Ethiopia to the collective Ottawa palate. If you're craving food from home or looking for a new dining experience, the exotic cuisine offered at Habesha will satisfy your appetite. All their dishes are made from scratch with healthy, fresh ingredients. Habesha has many vegetarian options, as well as the traditional lamb, beef, or chicken dishes. Whatever you choose, you are guaranteed to leave with a full and happy tummy. Habesha, 1087 Wellington. For reservations or takeout, call 761-6120.
We're back. You're listening to The Train, CHUO 89.1 FM. We're in studio here with John Dunn, who is a former foster child. He was in 13 different foster homes over a period of 16 years. He's the executive director of Foster Care Council of Canada. And we have another foster home survivor in studio as well, Jesse McVicker. He's looking to find the truth about foster care. And both of you are outspoken, and you're trying to reform and improve the system. And thanks for being in the studio with us today, guys.
Thank you for having us.
John and I have been going through on, but the whole time, Jesse, you've been pretty quiet. Is there something you want to kick in there before we continue?
Well, no, it's just I've always found it funny because I've known John for a long time, and John's always been the very nice, and he's always been he's the exact opposite of what I am. And I'm the charge to the doors, the guns blazing kind of guy, and John's the, hi, can we talk about this kind of person?
Uh-huh.
And to watch them do the same thing to him as they, like, watch them do
you
the same thing
you both get the
me,
same treatment.
Yeah, like, how does that work? They don't like me, and, yeah, I've caused them some trouble. And
well, it's direct action.
Exactly.
And you
but
speak
I mean,
directly
if
to them.
They would have just talked to me and listened to me in the first place, none of this would have been an issue. Yeah, I just wanted them to listen to me. I mean, they didn't listen to me when I was a kid. I guess I shouldn't have expected much more when I turned into an adult, eh?
Well, whether you're quiet or direct or loud, angry or contained, it's the message itself is threatening to them, right? You're,
mm-hmm.
you're basically bringing a critique that says the system is not working. You're doing terrible damage to generations of children here that end up in prison, that end up with terrible problems. They already have problems to start with often,
mm-hmm.
and you don't make them any better. And you know you have the medical and psychological knowledge you could make it better, but you don't. So you're basically making a very deep critique. It's just, and that's very threatening to this organization, it
definitely.
Appears, right?
Yes. Right. Definitely. Yeah.
Well, yeah, they're the holier than thou Children's Aid Society. Like you said, they could never do wrong. Well, we're proof that they can.
Yeah, and I never thought of what you said, that, you know, the two different sort of approaches, and they're getting the same reaction, you know, that it shocks me every time I realize that, you know, I've gone in, I'm always polite, I try to be professional, so that there is no reason for them to react the way they do, and they do it every time. And I never really, you know, I never thought of that, but that's
they
amazing.
They throw you out, and they're disrespectful, they don't give you answers.
Mm-hmm.
It's all secret, and
they label you as like a loose cannon, I've been called, and
it's
things
really
like
sad,
that. And I've never yelled, threatened, been violent, nothing.
Now, John, you have an interesting sort of lifeline, if you wish. I mean, you were in foster care until you were 18 years old.
Yes.
And then you appeared on the outside to be pretty, pretty well equilibrated. You had jobs. You would party on the weekend. You weren't depressed or anything. You were a happy-go-lucky guy, right, for many, many years.
Yeah. I spent my life, I moved through a lot of jobs. There was instability and a lot of homes. I mean, to date, I've moved 40-something times,
mm-hmm.
44 times, I think it is, if I want to count them all. And that's also a common threat amongst former foster kids is the multiple.
Change the environment.
You need to move every 6 months. It's a need to move. And if you don't, it can mentally break you down. It's
mm-hmm.
weird.
You have to get
really
adjusted
long.
To not moving, right? If you try not to move, right?
Yeah.
So you have this period in your life where you were working constantly, you had friends, the whole bit, and you wondered sometimes why your friends were having a hard time, yet you had lived through this incredible thing. And then what happened? About 5 years ago, right?
Yes, it was 2001, and I, you know, some people might want to attribute it to the fact that I had quit smoking, but I don't think it was just that. I mean, that might have been a bit of a help, but I did quit smoking. But 3 months after that, even, I don't know what happened, but I just suddenly had this horrible emotional breakdown. You know, I spent a full month in my apartment crying and kind of going nuts, not knowing what was going on. And I don't do drugs; I only drink, you know, weekends and mild drinking kind of guy. But something happened there. I snapped. And I still to this day don't know what happened.
A meltdown.
Yeah, some kind of breakdown, yeah.
And that would have lasted how long that you would have been in this state?
It was about a month almost, 3 weeks and almost a month.
So you weren't working, you were in your apartment.
Yeah, I was on, I had been working at CBC for a while, and I was on unemployment insurance for a year at that point.
Yeah.
And just about to expire my unemployment insurance. So I guess my mentality was I got to get back into the groove, start getting into the job search patterns and all that.
Uh-huh.
So there was that, you know, fear again,
anxiety,
of instability,
and
I'm going to lose more jobs, am I going to get jobs and all that. And that's the typical outcome,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I thought, you know what, it can't just be me. I mean, this is bizarre, my life, you know, what maybe other kids who've been in care have also suffered the same adulthood, you know, afterwards. So I thought, well, why don't I make a website? You know, I had access to the internet, and I made a website, and I called it in the beginning, Get It Together, right? And I was thinking that, you know, if I had a, and my theory was a distant friend theory, you know, get a people, when you get close to people, you sort of lose that respect that you give strangers, and you stop trying to impress them, right? So there's that sort of psychology behind it. And I thought, if we had a bunch of distant friends, quote unquote, to meet once a month.
Wow, straight out of our society. Boy, that concept, that's really something. We're all interacting via the internet here, so let's go. Yeah. So that was your theory, and?
So what I thought is that if I meet people on a regular basis, but not too regular to get comfortable with them, we might still want to try to impress them by saying, oh, well, I went out and did this month, and I tried. And it's sort of a self-improvement thing with other support, outside support, because usually we're isolated. I find a lot of former foster kids are isolated.
Right.
We're alienated from everything.
Yeah. And it built from there. So I had this website. And then I went to the Children's Aid Society, the Catholic Children's Aid that I was a child under, to get my records so I could look at my life and try to find it. Well, why did I move? Was I a bad kid? Did I, you know, why did I move through all these homes?
So you were stuffing your past before. Then you had this meltdown. And because you weren't looking at it, you were looking at your next job at the weekend, at... just trying to enjoy life, trying to be normal, I guess.
Free.
And you had this meltdown, and all of a sudden you were interested in your past. You were interested in what had happened to you that maybe had caused this meltdown. Is that sort of where you're going?
Yeah, and caused my whole adulthood of instability.
Like, right.
Why can't I hold a job
constantly and moving every 6 months, all that stuff.
Yeah.
So you're trying to sort it out. You're trying to, where is this coming from?
Yeah.
Is there a cause?
I was just tired of it. You know, I was 31 years old, and I was just like, this is... gotta be, you know, something wrong here, you know? This isn't normal.
We're told it's our fault by these people. They say, well, your instability, you're needing to move, you're unstable. And, like, take, for example, I go to fight for custody of my kid, and they use the fact that my life in care was unstable. And they basically extended my time in care to the moment I was in court, saying I was exactly that same person. I'm going... They're saying, well, he's going to be unstable, he's not going to move, he's not going to hold a job, blah, blah, blah.
They're criticizing themselves.
Yeah,
they're
basically
saying anyone in foster care is going to be unstable and so on. They're basically saying the system doesn't work, therefore we cannot allow you to see your own children, we can't allow you to have these privileges, right?
There are people who are sixth generation foster care kids.
Uh-huh.
If that doesn't say 1,000 words right then and there, it shouldn't have gone past generation one.
Yeah, because it was working. Yeah.
Remember, sixth generation, that's 60 years.
And
you
it's common that they
years?
Use the fact that you were in care
they made
that
assumption.
That's common, eh?
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. It's common. It's well documented or in their own files, which we can't get access to,
so
unfortunately.
So you're not competent to criticize the care system that you were in, even. You can't even do that.
I didn't even get
you're
to know my parents'
for
names
anything.
Until the court date when I had to defend for my son. I didn't even know my parents' names until... all of a sudden, I'm looking at this thing, and they're like, oh, this is from your file, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, oh, hey, that's my parents. Information, they wouldn't give me nothing. But they were able to call back to Alberta, and they got it like that. But I can't. How's that work?
And those records are, you know, there's thousands of records in the system, and there's serious occurrence reports, they call them. And it basically describes all the things that happen to kids in care. And if those things were able to be, you know, black out the personal information, but if the public were able to see them, I think they'd be shocked at what's going on inside the system.
If they got to see what exactly?
Serious occurrence reports. It's basically abuse reports. You know, what happened to this kid? Every time they're abused, there's a report done.
Mm-hmm.
Or every time they're quote-unquote restrained.
Yeah. Or moved to another home, there's a big six-long page report on the mental instability. But it's like these things are more or less, they're
so there
excuses.
There's a mountain of these internal reports about the horrendous abuse that's going on. And it gets looked into and studied every time they change homes because there's a reason for them changing homes, right?
Could be abuse in the home most often, or could be, you know, the child is just because of their issues has, you know, maybe causes the damage to the house or whatever the deal is. So,
And these results are sealed.
Even as a former foster kid, you can't get them.
You cannot get your own on your own.
And that's unprecedented.
Well, it's like a lot of people are like, well, where's your proof? Where's your proof?
So here's this publicly funded Public Health Institute, and Freedom of Information Act doesn't even apply to it. You can't even find these things out. Even researchers couldn't get them if they wanted to.
No, and if you want to go to the legislation with regard to what you're saying, there's the sections of the act that were, I guess, when the act was enacted, back whenever, and from 148 or whatever, somewhere in that range, it's about records, and it's never been proclaimed.
Wow.
That whole area about records is unproclaimed.
Wow.
So it's there, but not available to be used.
Yeah. So we live in a wonderful democracy. Open and transparent society. Isn't it great?
Yes, it's wonderful.
Okay. So you guys, I mean, that in itself would be reason enough to be angry when you become aware of that. But in addition to that, you've had to
I'm concerned.
You've had to
I'm concerned that what he went through and what I went through is happening to, what, they have 80,000 kids in care?
In Canada? Across Canada?
It's way, across Canada. It's 80,000 in Ontario, and I think is it across Canada?
80,000 across Canada and about 30,000 Crown wards, which are permanent in Ontario.
I keep forgetting.
Crown wards.
You can't tell me that they're all getting it good.
You can hear the words there. Crown is the government, the queen. Yeah. So, and ward is,
so until they're 18, crown is the parent, the legal guardian.
Crown ward.
Wow. The minister is your mother and father.
And you don't have the right to know who your parents were.
Well, if it's in the files.
Yeah, it depends. But you're not allowed to look at your own files about your life.
Right.
Well, sorry, I should clarify. You're allowed to go into the building on their hours, business hours, even if they're in Toronto, which my case happens to be, and look at the files. They give you a photocopied version with names blanked out, and then they photocopy it again so you can't scratch off the liquid paper.
Right.
And the other worker sits in there with you, and as you turn a page, she turns her page. And you sit there, and they watch every reaction you have. And they say it's for your own good, I'm sure.
Hmm.
But this is a bizarre practice.
Don't take pictures. It's all document stuff.
Doesn't sound like something I'd see in Canada, And I fought for 5 years to get my records. And there's still nothing like there's. I'm still fighting with Catholic Children's Aid. Yeah,
it sounds like something from another period, another a war conflict zone or something. It's crazy.
And I can't mention a name, but there was one worker who actually got fired trying to help me by making a summary of my file, and because this person didn't have the right office, hold the right office, wasn't in the records area, she was actually fired.
Now, why can't you mention the person's name? Just to give us some insight.
I've talked to her, and because of her current work, she doesn't want there to be some kind of association with her.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. Well, we're going to take a little break, digest some of that stuff. We're going to stick with Utah here. And we're going on with the story of Mother Jones. This track is called A Strike is a Massive Act of Free Speech.
Well, look, I'm going to sing you a couple of more, and then... and then take my leave. I've got to go across the bay so I can get up early for this free folk festival. I'm glad it's free. I mean, especially with... I'd never pay for this shit, man. I wouldn't. I'm no rube. I'm not dumb. and then that rally coming up on Sunday. I've gotten myself too busy this weekend, but I'll go off by myself sometimes and sleep under a tree. I'd be perfectly all right. Let's see... Yeah, the labor movement, free speech. Well, a strike is a massive act of free speech, isn't it? Free speech, I do understand the need for legislative action. I do understand the need for judicial action. But I also understand that it's absolutely essential that we have action on the shop floor, action in the workplace. I'm not talking about them competing, I'm talking about them two hands of the same body working together. You understand? Rather than throwing rocks at each other like they do in the shop, job action on the shop floor. Well, it's always been that way in the labor movement, the struggle to build workplace democracy. These old immigrant people I sing about, that never knew democracy, never knew freedom, where they came from, they came over to this country and they saw that ballot box and they saw those political parties. They embraced the tools of democracy, embraced them, fell in love with them. Took about a year to figure out. And if you brought those same tools into the workplace, they called out the National Guard and gunned you down. Took about a year to figure out that the boss wasn't and isn't serious about democracy. So the workers got to be serious about democracy. But building democracy where you live and work, democracy between you and your workmates, you and your lover, you and your children, building democracy where we live and work, because if we can't do it there, the biggest damn ballot box in the world won't do it for us. All right? So that's what the labor movement's stake in this is.
We're back. Yeah, that was an appropriate track there, because we were just talking about democracy with regards to the Children's Aid Society. You're listening to The Train. This is CHUO 89.1 FM, and we're in studio here with two experts who have survived the system, Jesse McVicker and John Dunn. Welcome back. John, we were talking about your struggle to get this list of members of this corporation that takes care of state children, et cetera, et cetera. And you're allowed to, according to the Act, you're entitled to this information. So you've applied, you've told them you were entitled to it, and you're continuing. You're not giving up. You're persistent at, in character, as usual. Mm-hmm. So what's the next step? How do they respond to you?
Well, I had received a letter from what they did is they retained a lawyer from on the outside. And
public funds, obviously, paying for this lawyer.
Yeah. Right out of the mouths of children.
Taxpayers' money going into a lawyer to write me a letter saying that, no, in fact, they're not going to give me a list of the members. And
incredible.
Yeah.
It's in the Act. They have to give it to you.
It states that it's an offense.
And a lawyer is not going to give it to you.
Yes. And, to top it off, this lawyer participates and says, yes, you know, I'm going to support this organization, my client, and allow them to go ahead and break the law, which is something a lawyer shouldn't be doing.
Now, he put it in writing. This lawyer put it in writing, so I think you should read all or part of that letter. Have it.
Yeah, no doubt.
His name's Robert Morrow, and he works with Burke Robertson here in Ottawa. And what the paragraph states, and it's it's done very professionally, but I'm going to read it anyways and let people decide themselves.
Do it. We expect it to be professional.
Oh, of course.
Not necessarily honest, but professional.
Anyway. Right.
They charge. I should hope so.
So here's what he has said. This is Robert C. Morrow's letter to me. So, and the last paragraph, he says, "You are hereby on notice of these facts. If you present a complaint or otherwise improperly and falsely allege a violation of Section 307(5) of the Act or any related legislation, it will be met by such appropriate measures as are necessary to prevent you or anyone acting on your behalf from making a false complaint." And then the last line is, "Your documents and your check are enclosed. I have not retained a copy." So
wow.
He then sent it all back.
He's even cleaning his own file. He's not kept a copy. He's informing you that he refuses to keep this on file. Disgusting.
Right.
Oh, yes. That paragraph you read, that's called intimidation.
Yep.
Flat-out intimidation.
Well, it's also implying that what he's saying is false.
Right.
And it's just a law. It's right there.
Yes, we just read the paragraph from the Act. You're entitled to this information. He's telling. So this lawyer is acting illegally, as far as I can tell.
Yep.
He's telling you that he himself, in his professional capacity, is going to prevent you from accessing these documents that you have a right to have.
Yeah.
And he's also saying, and he's admitting in writing...
The list of members, sorry.
Yeah, list of members, that's what I mean. He's also saying, and he's admitting it in writing, he says, "We're not even going to keep an institutional record of your request. I'm practicing a cover-up right here now, and I'm telling you about it."
Right. I never noticed that. But
it's incredible. It's disgusting. Unbelievable.
Yeah. And the word "not" is underlined. I have not retained a copy.
That's right. So this is not even on record. It's cleaned out. If anyone asks about this, it's gone.
We've never
heard of it. Never happened.
It's a good thing you have that letter, huh?
Unbelievable. It's signed. There's the original. That signature would be hard to reproduce.
I see a last line here that I didn't see on page 2.
Okay.
"Please be assured that your threat of prosecution will not go unanswered." So there's more intimidation.
Wow. Yeah. Threatening you like that.
Slimy.
Well, listen. Wow, John, I am on your side. You need support.
Yeah.
I'm there with you, and let's gather support for this.
That's incredible
intimidation. That's disgusting. Yeah. Talk about trying to crush someone who's simply trying to get his rights respected.
Yeah, and my ultimate goal is just to get a list of the members so I can communicate with them.
Of course.
Regarding matters with the corporation.
Of course, and
it's not out to prosecute them.
It doesn't even matter what your goal is.
Yeah.
Because you're totally in your right.
Yeah.
They don't like it, and they're sicking this lawyer on you.
Yes.
Unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
He's trying to pull me away from the provincial offense. He's trying to pull me into Rule 14, civil procedure, where he specializes.
Right.
Or he doesn't specialize in 14, but civil procedure.
Yeah.
He's trying to get me away from there and direct me.
Away
from the
act.
He's asking me on the phone just yesterday.
Yeah.
Or the day before, he called and said, you know, are you going to proceed with the, you know, 14 application and stuff? He's trying to sort of pull me away from this action.
The fact that they would take the trouble to be that direct and to intimidate you with that degree of intensity,
mm-hmm.
to me is a sign that that they're worried, that there's something here. They really want to try and crush this. They're using a hammer.
Oh, yeah.
And they would not normally do this if they weren't feeling the heat.
Mm-hmm.
And so what are you going to do with that now? You're still thinking about it? You're sleeping on it?
I said I'm sort of sleeping on it because I'd like ultimately to resolve it.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, they've already violated the act. They've already committed a provincial or committed an offense.
But it's gone further than that. This is it's blackmail. It's participating in a crime.
Yeah.
And with a cover up as well. It's incredible.
Like, why would a lawyer's office accept money?
It's plain.
Only
trained people would not see this clearly for what it is.
Right.
You'd have to be a professional. You'd have to be trained to not see things clearly, to not see what's going on here.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's wild.
Unbelievable. Wow, what a shocker.
Yeah.
Woo. Well, you're listening to The Train. I'm your host, Denis Roncourt. Jesse, you look like you want a reaction here.
No,
you're upset, eh?
Reach for the microphone.
Okay, now, let's not go out against lawyers, but this is a serious act here.
Right.
What's going on?
It's not a lawyer's act. I'm sorry.
Okay, I'm getting carried away. So we're going to give ourselves a little bit of a breather break here. We're going to stick with Utah Phillips. And let's see. We're going to stay with the same album called Making Free Speech. And we're going to go to This Land Is Our Land. That's what the track is called. Here we go.
The lost verses to This Land Is Your Land? Oh, God. As I was walking an endless breadline, my landlord gave me a two-week deadline. The local paper printed a better headline. It's not for you and me. This land is their land. It is not our land. From your plush apartment to your Cadillac carland, from your Wall Street office to your Hollywood starland. Oh, this land is not for you and me. And take your slogan and kindly stow it. If this is our land, you'd never know it. Let's get together and overthrow it. Hey, this land was made for you and me. There comes a time when the operation of the machine is so odious that you cannot even tacitly participate. You've got to place your body on the gears, the levers, all the apparatus. You've got to indicate to those who own it and those who run it that unless you are free, the machine will be prevented from working at all. Mario Savio. This conference we're going to be having...
You know, we weren't around. He read something about them threatening me with...
So he replied.
So he replied.
Right.
And they then decided to send 10 police officers.
Right.
And it's right after that point in time, I was like, okay,
all of us who pay taxes are really proud of...
Mr. Nice Guy.
Yeah.
So I have to be obnoxious. I have had to do whatever. I sat under house arrest telling people on the phone what to do with sites and how to program and what to do because I can't go online and help them myself. Mm-hmm. It slowed down everything for
Okay.
Well, I mean, we do what we can, right?
Yep. There's actually a mother in jail, or who was in jail for having a website describing her situation, because under 45 of the Act, you're not allowed to identify kids in care or their parents or family.
Right.
And
so she would have put enough of a description together. Mm-hmm. They figure that possibly they could have been identified if someone knew them, blah, blah, blah.
And the ironic thing is, God, the boy ran away from a group home. And a lot of times when you see missing child or missing youth,
yeah,
it's usually, well, I shouldn't say it's usually, but they say ran away from home, but yeah, they probably ran away from a group home. They published this boy's picture against the law. They published his photograph, his name, his full identification, but they put her in jail for having a website which may have inferred that he was who he
was. I was on that website very thoroughly. It blotted out the eyes, it blotted out the names. There was no way to identify those children at all.
We are going to move on to the next show here.
All right. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Things have got to change.
Kids are counting on it.
Yeah. We've uncovered some truth here, and we're going to try and fix it. And our listeners are going to help us. And we're going to move on now to the... we're going to have some crossover music, but stay tuned for Junior with Au Cœur de la Rue.
The train is coming now. It's so long now, behaving. Waiting for you. Oh, yeah. Now the time has come when it's between me and you. Oh, love. Said the train is coming, baby. The train is coming now. Every day I pray for this little hour. Now the time has come, and I want you to stand by me. We will roam this land where we all will be free. Lord, I said the train is coming, baby. I said the train is coming now. I said the train is coming, baby.